Happy home opener, Milwaukee Brewers fans. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Microbrew Podcast, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And look who I found on the other end. It's Kurt Hoge, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He will be at opening day today. I will be at opening day today. Todd Rosiak will be there. A cast of thousands. And the undefeated Milwaukee Brewers are going to be looking to continue what they have going on early in the season against the Minnesota Twins. Our favorite player, Jakob Junich, will be opening up as the home opener starting pitcher. So a lot of people are going to learn a lot about Jacob Junis when they get to the game and realize they don't know the starting pitcher. But we will save that for a second. The Brewers went to Queens, New York, took on the Mets.
Beautiful Flushing, New York.
Beautiful Flushing, New York. Yes, I know. It's not in Queens. It's in Flushing.
No, it's Queens, but then Flushing's within Queens.
Oh, so that actually eludes me a little bit. Full disclosure, I've never been to New York City. I understand the borough system. I understand kind of how it works, but I actually thought Flushing was kind of its own separate.
It is not its own bureau.
Well, it's not. I know it's not a borough, but I thought it was like kind of separate somehow. I guess I don't know. So it is part of the Queens borough. Is that
it's correct? Separate in spirit. If you ever go to Flushing, I guess maybe this is true of every like little pocket in New York. But sure. Flushing is for sure separate from like
the rest of
New York I say this as someone who stays in Flushing and then walks to the ballpark.
I see.
It's a good time.
Do you stay anywhere near Flushing Meadows, home of some pretty high level tennis?
Well, the ballpark is right there.
Oh, it is. Okay. Again,
it's directly across the street from it's directly across the street from the where the U.S. Open is held, and then the World's Fair or something along that line was also held like right there back in the days when they did the World's Fair.
Yeah, the World's Fair used to be a really big deal. And you know how I know this? Is that there are four stars on the city of Chicago flag, and two of them are for World Fairs, previous World's Fairs that were hosted in Chicago.
What are the other stars for?
One of them is for the Chicago Fire, which apparently gets its
a own star.
Yeah.
Isn't that a bad thing? And then the other one is for what? Signing Craig Counsell from the Brewers?
it's for Michael Jordan, obviously. No, the first star is actually for Fort Dearborn, located in, you know, Chicago. Or I think, I don't even know. I don't know a lot about Fort Dearborn.
I'm out. I don't know a whole lot about our neighbors to the south. I'm going to be honest with you.
Other than they stole the manager? Those are the four stars.
I did.
World's Fairs, big damn deal. Just huge. People loved the World's Fair. I don't know what it took, like what came that took the place in our hearts of World's Fairs, but there was something that had to have come
along. Olympic? No, the Olympics and the World's Fair went on at the same time.
Yeah.
COVID. Pandemics.
We moved on from World's Fairs long before COVID.
Oh.
Yeah.
When was the last World's Fair?
That's a good question. When was the last World's Fair? What a great trivia question, Kurt. It looks like they still happen. Looks like we had one in Kazakhstan in 2017. Is that right?
Well,
am I seeing this correctly?
Time for Milwaukee to get a bid in, I think.
Milan and Italy hosted in 2015.
We can't host an NBA All-Star game, but we can host a national convention and
two national conventions. I mean, the other one didn't happen because of COVID, but it would have happened.
We did get handed both national conventions and a World's Fair.
That's right. We can do things here in Milwaukee.
There's a lot of parking space for it at MGM Field.
There's a lot of parking all over the city of Milwaukee. The one thing Milwaukee could also have is a team that goes 162-0 in the 2024 season after a 3-0 start to the season. Kurt, a lot of good vibes, a lot of good things. We're gonna talk about as many of them as we can. We'll have three up, three down. We will have your take of the week. I've also got a remember when, digging into the past a little bit, that we'll have to get to. But I think we have to start with the drama. There was drama in Flushing/Queens. When Rhys Hoskins, old friend of the Mets program, apparently, got a little bit. And this kind of rippled through the entire weekend. This is on opening day. So lots to talk about with opening day, but just the drama of the new first baseman, first season wearing something other than a Mets uniform for Rhys Hoskins. He slides into second base. Jeff McNeil doesn't like the slide, takes offense. Players casually saunter out of the bullpen. It's not even benches clearing. It's more like benches casually emptied, I think. And
yes, Tyrone Taylor was simply coming out to say hello.
That's right.
His former teammates.
Tyrone Taylor, by the way, just incredible vibes. He will always be about the vibes. Love that man. Glad
first team all vibes. First team all smile.
100%.
Yeah.
He was not going to throw any punches, but yeah, there was some to do about it. Jeff McNeil was yelling. Rhys Hoskins, in legendary format, did a crybaby gesture directed at, yes, you can see it if you're watching us on YouTube. Like and subscribe. You can see Kurt demonstrating the crybaby gesture.
Five stars. Wait, no, that's not on YouTube, is it?
I don't know.
Five stars.
Yeah, no, that's an Apple Podcast thing, but we welcome the five stars. And he got three. Then Hoskins had a great day on day two. The ball was thrown behind him. Johan Ramirez is ejected from the game. He later pitches on Sunday. Johan Ramirez does, even though he's been suspended for three games. He's appealing, of course, as one does. Brand new manager who's now facing a suspension on his first day as the guy holding the reins for the New York Mets. Just a cacophony of weirdness. And I don't know where this leaves you. I thought it was just really great. I mean, silly and great at the same time. I think Brewers fans are really going to warm up quickly to Rhys Hoskins. I think he's going to get a nice round of applause today when the lineups are announced at American Family Field. But wow, what do you make of all of this, Kurt?
A couple thoughts. My first thought when it was going down was this: Rhys Hoskins is one of the like most straightforward, nicest dudes in baseball.
Totally chill, right?
Yeah, just like. Completely reminds me of like an Andrew McCutchen type guy. Like he's going to play the game hard, but like, I don't really think anyone who's played with him or knows him well would like have a whole lot of bad things to say about him personally. So that's why I was a bit surprised that Jeff McNeil was so frustrated in the moment. Now, apparently there's some past history.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Jeff McNeil was talking about Rhys Hoskins having some slides, and I'm here to say, JR, I did some investigating.
Oh, a Kurt Hogan investigation, a John Boy breakdown, but
it's style. I can't say it's 100% complete because it's really hard to search for individual players sliding on StatCast. But I did a pretty deep dive of like runner on first, Mets, Phillies, ground ball, could be a fielder's choice, could be an error, could be an infield single.
Okay.
Could be a stolen base with McNeil at second and Hoskins running at first. And I just didn't see a whole lot like that really would have stood out. Obviously, they had a previous beanball home run war, the first one of two now in their history. But I was just a bit surprised that that McNeil kind of was as mad as he was. Now he didn't like the slide. I don't really have an opinion either way on the slide. Like I think it was a little late for sure. He made contact. It's also a legal slide, so it's kind of a gray area. Probably depends on honestly which team you prefer.
Yeah.
Brewers fans are gonna like it. Philly fans are gonna like it too. Mets fans are gonna hate it. But I think it's the slide itself was firmly in that gray area. But here's the main thing for me from this
ruckus,
this fray, this disgruntlement, et cetera. It is Carlos Mendoza's second game as manager of the Mets. And you're throwing at a guy's head?
Yeah.
You haven't won a game yet. You have more suspensions as a manager than wins as within your team has wins.
That's still
suspended before you won a game. The Mets showed. I always hesitate to say a team showed no fight, but the Mets didn't show a whole lot of fight in that series. Aside from throwing at a dude's noggin.
Yeah,
I understand. Like, there's that contingent of baseball fans that's always gonna be like, well, he's got to wear one in the ribs. And like, I completely disagree with that to begin with, but there's a big difference between wearing one in the ribs and having someone throw directly at their head. So that's kind of where I lie on it is like, really, Mets? It's your second game of the season, your second game with this guy as manager, and we're throwing at people?
Yeah, I thought it was weak. Really, really weak, really stupid. And I mean, the Mets managers took, I should say Mets announcers, Keith Hernandez and the like, took a little bit of a hit for saying it was too late to do that, that they should have done it early in the game is the implication there. Which,
yeah, but they're not going to do that with the starter.
Right, right. And I, exactly, yes. I mean, they brought in a guy with questionable control, presumably with this in the back of their mind, this opportunity. And I think they didn't hit him, you know, they threw it behind him. So you can at least allow for a little wiggle room for this is different than actually beaming the guy. He just wanted to send him, you know, quote unquote message or whatever. I guess, like, I just keep thinking we're getting closer to weeding this stuff out of baseball, where it just isn't something that you're not going to, I mean, Jeff McNeil, I don't know a lot about Jeff McNeil, but it, you know, Rhys Hoskins certainly implied that this has come up with Jeff McNeil before, that he tends to get sensitive about stuff like this. How do I think the slide was? I thought it was okay. You know, Jeff McNeil, some people said he could have probably moved around to get out of the way a little bit better. I mean, where he got hit was, I would say, kind of alarming if you're the fielder, because, you know, the way he planted and, you know, he kind of got hit on both legs, like you could see that causing injury and you could see the immediate sort of reaction to get upset. I wouldn't maybe have done the crybaby gesture. I enjoyed that very much. I thought it was fantastic. Great content, hilarious content on opening day. But that's probably, I probably may not have done that. Hoskins otherwise pretty stoic about the whole thing. You know, he gets thrown behind. He just puts his hands on his hips and stands there. You know, he's not going to charge the mound or anything. But it is dismaying that a brand new manager not only decides to throw it behind a guy, but, you know, maybe even wasn't going to. And then Hoskins had a good day, drove in four runs in his first two at-bats deliciously. And then decides, okay, now's the time. Now's the time that we're going to send that message. And that's frustrating. I can't believe in 2024, as much as we say, people like us talk about how bad of a look that is, how dangerous that is, how stupid that is, the people in the game of baseball still leave room for that. They still leave room for that, like, tit for tat. You know, I will legislate on the field and let you know what you can and cannot do. That's really, really frustrating that we're still there.
Yeah. If I'm Jeff McNeil, full transparency, I'm probably upset at the slide. He started the slide a bit late and it made some contact with him. McNeil probably could have gotten out of the way, like you said.
You are still allowed to break up a double play. That is not allowed to get out of the game.
Yeah, that's exactly the gray area of that slide. It was fully within, I mean, they challenged it. It was fully within the legal parameters of a slide into second base. And yeah, that's that. But taking it to the next day and then throwing at a guy, and then that's really the only punch that the Mets showed all series. Like, we can talk about this too, but I like the way the Brewers played the game of baseball this series was exactly what, like, the kind of fight, if you're a Mets fan, you want to see from your guys after, you know, if you perceive that Jeff McNeil, you know, they tried to take him out with the dirty slide. Like, that's the kind of ball you want to see. Really athletic defense, taking away hits, pesky rallies, pesky at-bats, stealing bases.
Eight stolen bases, of them.
That's what the Brewers did all series. And it's, I think, going to be their brand of baseball this year. And the Mets didn't, like, I'm not really sure what their identity is this year, other than old, but still less old than last year, but still kind of old. It'll be an interesting year in Flushing/Queens.
/ New York City. David Stearns, former, of course, Brewers general manager, has some work to do, I think. And it, yeah, they were behind the eight ball. They lost Kodai Senga, who would be their presumed number one starting pitcher, to an injury. So everybody kind of had to move up. Jose Quintana's not the guy you want throwing on opening day. I mean, yes, he has all... Even though it's the Brewers. And that's like his magic luck charm, and he has all the success against the Brewers. That's not the guy you want starting on opening day. And
no, it's not. It is not. I can right. Confirm that. Yeah.
And I would say the Brewers rotation is no great shakes either on paper, but the pitching certainly was good. Certainly on opening day. One hitter on opening day. Pat Murphy's first win as Milwaukee Brewers manager. Freddy Peralta allows a home run. Otherwise, six innings, one hit baseball. You got some great work out of the bullpen there. I mean, they're short guys too. You know, Devin Williams isn't there, but you got lockdown performances from Trevor McGill, Yoel Piamps, Abner Uribe at the back end, the first of his two saves this weekend. Just a tremendous pitching performance. I don't think we're going to get a lot of these this year, but with Freddy Peralta on the mound, a lot is possible. That is the fifth one hitter that Freddy Peralta has been involved with. I think all of them, there might have been a 2019 in there, but I think
since 2021,
all since 2021, like six consecutive years, the Brewers have had at least one hitter now. That's incredible. That's sort of reflective of the times, but that's insane stuff from Freddy Peralta and the bullpen. Jackson Chourio was not overmatched. I mean, you could say there's so many nice things you could say about opening day alone, let alone the series that followed. But just a very complete, great defensive, everything coming together. And I mean, we could say this about the first game or the three games in general, but like, if the Brewers are this team, and yes, small sample, obviously, we have to take that into account, but
very small.
That's the best.
And the Mets are stinky.
The Mets are quite bad. But that's still like the best version of them. Like you said, aggressive.
That's absolutely the method for the Brewers. Maybe sock some more balls out of the yard, but yeah.
We did get home runs from Christian Yelich, who looked very good in his first series. That was nice.
Yeah. The homers were from the guys that you need to hit the homers. Like they have some pop, but they do not have a bunch of boppers.
Yeah. A lot of eyes were on Jackson Chourio. I mean, that was probably one of the things you had to be paying the most attention to going into the first series. Chourio does get a hit in his major league debut. He does drive in a run. He does make a couple defensive plays with more to come as the weekend unfolded. He gets an extra base hit. He has his first stolen base on opening day. Scores. I don't know if he scored, actually. He didn't score in the first inning, so I'm not sure. But it doesn't matter. He's done the things, you know, like I would have expected him to be overmatched. I still expect him to be overmatched at times early in the season. I am not ruling that out, but you see him play and you see somebody who's like, yeah, that guy is ready to be a big leaguer. I thought maybe not. I didn't know. I knew he'd be here. I didn't know for sure that we would see a guy who looks like a big leaguer, but he looks like a big leaguer and he can fly and he can run it down. And that's pretty encouraging, Kurt. So what did you see from him and did it match what you expected?
Yeah, I think it went a little above what I expected, because I was going to get to this on three up, three down, but I'm going to get to hit it now.
Let's go.
Which, by the way, three up, three down, we back, baby.
We back, baby. It's We're here. Back.
The regular season is back, and so are our segments. But in spring, I was having a discussion with someone else up in the press box. We're like, I don't know how much you want to have a guy that can like rely on getting infield hits. Because it can come and it can go. Like, there are much more sustainable ways to be good on offense. We kind of saw it with Joey Weimer last year. He came up, had a bunch of infield singles, and then they dried up. But with Jackson Chourio, it might be a steady stream of currency to reach base.
Yeah.
He's so fast. I mean, he ran a four second flat, right-handed batter's box to first for his second hit on Sunday. That is certifiably insane.
Yeah.
And it's not just the incredible speed that he has, but like there's when he rolls over on a ball, something about the way he finishes the swing has him like, and how quick twitch he is. He's already going down to first. Like some guys swings like Tyrone Taylor, someone that I think of when I think of this, like, he plays a little below his speed running to first, mm-hmm. because when he finishes a swing, he's like back heel kind of fading away from first base. Chourio, when he's rolling over on a ball, that man's already in the left-handed batter's box. He's making his way to first. So the speed really, really plays. We saw it in the outfield. He had a terrible route to catch a little pop-up in shallow right center on Sunday. Awful route. And just completely made up for it with his speed. Made the catch with not ease, but didn't have to dive or anything. So it totally changes games, changes his game. And then we saw a little bit of the power show up with a double. He lined a ball back up the middle for a base hit. So that'll come too. We saw it come along a little later in spring. But all in all, like, the pitch selection was solid. He had some really, really good takes. And it's just electric. Like you said, there's no question that he belongs on a big league field right now.
When we talk about this team's strengths, you know, we maybe didn't mention speed that much. We've talked about it before, but when Garrett Mitchell is healthy, Bryce Terang, Christian Yelich, Tyler Black, when he gets here, Joey Weimer, you know, there's Sal Frelick. There's so many guys in this lineup that can run well.
Blake Perkins.
Indeed. Got himself a start.
We're putting some respect on that man's name.
Absolutely. I mean, these guys can all run. Mm-hmm. We saw them steal 8 bases this weekend. 4 of them from Terang. You know,
Bryce Terang, MLB stolen base leader.
The Brewers lead the league going into Monday, and Bryce Terang leads individuals. That's not something I expected, maybe to that degree. Do you think that's normal? I mean, Omar Narvaez is catching Francisco Alvarez for the Mets, like you could see that maybe they'd be picking on those guys in particular, but just to see them jump out that quickly, I guess I didn't realize that would be part of the Pat Murphy experience, but maybe it is. And the success rate is really, really striking so far.
Yeah. I think the part of it was the Mets, from my amateur observations, didn't do a great job holding runners on.
No.
Whereas the Brewers didn't allow a single stolen base attempt total. Well, they also didn't allow like anyone on first base really on in the first game, but total 180 from last year when they really struggled with that. But yeah, this absolutely should be a big part of this identity for the offense. Now, Bryce Turang has to get on base mm-hmm. at that clip,
which he did in this series.
But if he's able to continue to do so, find ways to get on first base, he is a really, really good base runner. He's not quite as fast as Garrett Mitchell, but I think he's a better base runner, better base stealer than Garrett Mitchell, or so my eyes would tell me. And there's no reason that a group of really, really good base runners who understand their identity as an offense and aren't going into this year just like solely trying to be a team that hits home runs. I see no reason that, I mean, it's going to slow down a little bit, but you know, why can't they get 180, 200 stolen bases? I see no reason why they can't.
Here's another thing that when we talk about lineups, I think you and I kind of roll our eyes a little bit. We're not really huge fans of caring too deeply about how lineups are constructed or how they're, you know, who's playing where, who's batting where. But I was interested in a little bit of how Pat Murphy stacked this up, because I still in the back of my mind thought that Pat Murphy was more of an old school kind of guy. And I, not that I thought this was an indictment on him at all. I don't think that. I figured on opening day, he would have, regardless of the type of pitcher you had, he'd have his best, you know, nine guys out there in some way, shape, or form. And he still played the matchups a little bit. Self Relic was not in the opening day starting lineup. You know, Blake Perkins is out there. You got Jackson Churio leading off. Like he's doing things that are what we've seen over the last few years with Craig Counsell, just a very, you know, aggressive adherence to platoons. And then immediately when Quintana was out of that game and right-handers came in, he pulled those guys and brought in the left-handers, including Turang. So I was struck by that aggressiveness. And maybe that shouldn't surprise me. I just figured there'd be a little bit of like, let our guys play on opening day baked into it. But no, they're going to go at this aggressively with their platoons. And that's why Oliver Dunn, we talked about this, why he's on this team, having that left-handed third base guy. They made a lot of use out of Oliver Dunn this weekend. They're going to use everybody on this roster. So, you know, not a lot of Gary Sanchez yet. Like, I found that all kind of interesting. Did that strike you in any way?
I mean, not entirely surprising. This is how they've operated. It's not just Pat Murphy making the lineup. It's right. He is a decision maker in the lineup, maybe the ultimate one. But there are other people involved in these decisions, not just with the Brewers, but across baseball. So, yeah, there is one situation that came in my mind that now I've like been thinking about is Jake Bowers is probably a guy they want to play against right-handed pitching. But I do think you're in a bit of a conundrum if you have, say, Hoskins at DH and Bowers at first, right?
Yeah.
That's that specific order, not Hoskins at DH, or not Hoskins at first and Bowers at DH, but specifically Bowers at first. Is that if you get late in the game and, you know, Bowers is hitting sixth, right? Lefties, you know, big, hard throwing lefty in the eighth inning, Jose Alvarado. You don't want Jake Bowers facing him. That's why Gary Sanchez is on the team. However,
you lose your DH.
Like you might lose your, like, who's going to play first base? Gary Sanchez is your pinch hitter. Maybe Oliver Dunn can play first base or something. I don't know. But you pinch hit for Bowers with Sanchez. And all of a sudden, now who plays first? You're putting Hoskins at first, losing the DH. So there's a couple of quirky fits, I think, still. Like the platoon thing isn't 100% straightforward necessarily. But, yeah, we're going to see a lot of Oliver Dunn, especially if he looks as good and comfortable as he did at the plate, not swinging at balls, hitting the ball very hard. That's the Oliver Dunn experience. So he's going to get a lot of time at third base.
Made a nice backhanded play. It didn't turn into an out because Rhys Hoskins couldn't scoop it up. I think that was Saturday.
The defense from Oliver Dunn was whew.
Oliver Dunn is going to be on this team a lot of the year. he's a regular Milwaukee Brewer.
Yeah, I don't unless he just doesn't hit. I don't see him going down for a while. He's got the starting third base job.
I think
point blank.
I think he does. Yeah. I mean,
we now they might DH him. I think there's days where Colin Ray pitches or like another ground ball guy pitches. Maybe we'll see if Joe Ross ends up being a guy like that, where they want, regardless of who the opposing pitcher is, they want Terang, they want Ortiz at second and third just for your infield defense. But most of the time it's going to be Oliver Dunn. And we saw yesterday, or not yesterday, but Sunday, they put him in as the DH. Oliver Dunn's in the lineup, man.
He's your designated hitter, just as we all thought coming out of it took 3 days to break down a lot of expectations here. One thing we did expect was Abner Uribe to get closing opportunities. He did not get all three of them, because after two in a row, you would assume they'd go to someone else. They did. Payamp takes care of the third one. We love the Abner experience. It was really, really fun. He gave up a run. He gave up a home run to Pete Alonso. No shame. No shame. What are you shushing me for? What is that?
I'm shushing the Mets.
Oh, shushing the Mets. I thought that when that celebration on Saturday was like a, I thought it was, he like holstered a gun, like blew out
he
the
did.
Gun. And
he did.
It. Is that what it was?
Oh, well, he holstered the gun, but, and he was not blowing out the gun. No, he was then shushing the Mets.
He is such a good time. He is such a good time.
It's must see TV, baby.
Must see TV. He looked really good. And I think similar to Churio, I mean, obviously he was good last year. He had a couple hiccups, but he didn't, you know, he met the moment, right? I thought opening day, you know, it's a two-run game. I thought
dicey.
His
dicey.
Very first pitch, dude, was so far outside.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, well. This is going to happen. He's going to
Ramon Hernandez all over again.
Exactly. Came back into the zone through, I think the next two pitches were strikes. He was totally locked in. Also, I think pretty encouraging because you could see it go any number of ways, and it probably will again, but that was,
it also started to go south on him on Saturday. I mean, I don't think it was really like anything he did wrong on Saturday. Pete Alonso is just an insane fastball hitter and hit an insane fastball out to left field
with like an incredible swing. He's incredible. Someone should save him from the New York Mets.
But like, I don't know. Okay, home run, one run game. You have no big league closing experience, and he locked it down. He threw strikes. He threw strikes, and you can absolutely. I mean, the old cliche, you know, when it's a one or when it's a two or three or four whatever run game in the ninth inning, is like home run is no different than a walk. Doesn't mean you want to give up home runs, but like with Abner Uribe, I think it's just like it's a better sign there that he got taken yard than if he had just walked Alonso on four pitches.
Yeah,
he's challenging him. And most 95% of the time when Abner Uribe challenges a guy in or around the zone with the sinker or the slider, he's going to win.
Yeah, I think you're right. And again, bullpen, tremendous work. I mean, we've got maybe another plotted in three up, three down involving the bullpen, which we'll get to. But before we get there, a couple more things I just wanted to touch on. Christian Yelich looking very, very good. That's another really encouraging sign because, you know, he had a very good year last year. But, you know, you don't know, was that the aberration after several years where he had dropped off dramatically? But absolutely not. He homers in his first game. He pulls the homer. That's a big deal. That's a big deal in Brewers Twitter circles for sure, if nowhere else. And, you know, hitting the ball hard and looking pretty solid. And Kurt, throwing a dude out from the outfield wall. What has
Let's that
mean to Christian Yelich?
So this is something else a random chat I was having during spring. It was like the throws that Yelich struggles with seem to be the ones where he's coming in on the ball. You know, the guy's touching third and he's got to yeet a throw home.
Yeah.
And he really seems to like that just does not seem to go well for him. I don't know if it's he speeds up too much or whatnot, but like there's plays where he's ranging to the line or going back and he's just got to make a quick pivot and throw. And those are pretty solid.
Amazing.
And that one was really solid. I mean, Harrison Bader is not slow.
And he was beaten by several feet on that throw. It almost he almost overthrew second base.
There was the camera shot went to Bader rounding first. And you could kind of see it in his, like you could see the mental process play out where, you know, they know the scouting report. Oh, Yelich in left. That's a green light. I'm going to take second here. Mm-hmm. And then about three steps after rounding, he's like, oh, no. Oh, bleep.
That's tough.
I'm out.
Are you saying you think it could be even like a mental thing? You know how like when you, it's similar to a third baseman, when you have time to react, sometimes that's not a good thing, that he's just able to get more distance on his throws or accuracy even?
Maybe. I think it's largely still mechanical. Like,
sure,
the throw just doesn't look clean. Like there was one, I think it was the run in Sunday's game, maybe on Tyrone Taylor's single.
Yes,
the wind up and the throw still
looked like, been a play.
It still looked like he was laboring a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm not an outfield coach. I was an outfielder, but not good.
Shouts to Brown Deer.
Not good. Shout out to Brown Deer.
I don't know. I 3 years ago, if you had told me at any point in history, Christian Yelich would be at the wall on the warning track and throw out Harrison Bader running from first to second, I would have laughed in your face. I didn't believe that was possible, but that was a cannon throw on the money. I mean, not what, you know, almost over the money, but like he got it where it needed to be. And that was tremendous stuff. Great defense for the Brewers all the way around. Before we get to 3-3 down, DL Hall, he's your starter on Saturday, worked 4 innings. I wouldn't say they were spectacular, kind of what you'd expect to see. A little bit of control, but you know, for the most part, kept the team in the game. And the Brewers had a healthy lead for most of that. So give me your impressions of that, because I still think DL Hall is a very big deal on this roster and in this rotation, especially until they get fully healthy, if they ever get fully healthy. So I'm curious to know what you think of him.
DL Hall is why there's a difference between control and command. Mm. He controlled the ball great on Saturday. Wasn't walking guys, was living around the zone. He commanded the ball terribly. Mm. The fastballs were very hittable. He left some breaking balls right over the middle of the zone. His misses when they were like, he had some big misses as well. I can think of a lot of like the changeup was fine, but he had a lot of changeups that just like he really pushed arm side. So that's sort of the DL Hall experience, except it wasn't really the DL Hall experience because he was throwing 91.
Yeah.
I think that's something to definitely keep an eye on. He was up to 94, 95 earlier in spring, and then his last spring start was more around that same velocity, like 92. It did not ratchet back up in New York. So we'll see. I mean, he says he's healthy. There's, you know, nothing feels wrong. But for DL Hall to succeed, that fastball needs to be at least like 94, 95. And when it is, you see how much better it is, because he didn't have a single swing and miss at the fastball. It's a fastball that's been touted as a grade 80 fastball, like elite fastball. I've always been a little like skeptical on putting an 80 on it, because to me, that's like Jacob Mizorowski.
Sure.
80. It's, you know, but DL Hall's, when he's throwing 95, 96, the thing rides, like it rises, and it's coming with great extension and great velocity. But it was not there on Saturday. One start is not totally indicative. We'll see if he can get the velocity back, but he's going to need to. He's really, really going to need to.
Yeah, I think he'd be lined up to start in that Colorado series after the Twins leave town.
It was the Mariners.
Is it the Mariners next? I get confused. I don't think ahead of like 1 week.
I think it's the Mariners.
Mariners. Okay. So he would definitely be in that series because with the two games. Is it Joe Ross? Do we know that is going to be on Wednesday, or are they going to go?
Junish, and then Jacob Ross in the home game.
It is, once again, I feel compelled to point out, Jacob Junis. We are, yes, mispronouncing the name like idiots. Let's move into some of the more granular details from this week. It's back, baby. Three up, three down. Kurt, you got to get us started. What were some of the little things that we haven't talked about yet that you think we need to point out here?
Brian Hudson.
Holy smokes.
Brian Hudson is funky.
There's a lot going on there.
That's, I mean, he's a 6'8", 6'9" power lefty. You look at him and you think, okay, this guy's coming in. He's hucking 98.
Nope.
No, he's throwing 91, and he's doing it from like basically a sidearm slot.
I would venture to guess there's no other pitcher in baseball who is releasing the ball he's releasing it.
And it's not just the height too, right? Because his arms are so long, it's coming from like first base, Right. Whereas opposed, you know, Hobie Milner's coming really funky at you, but I'm not sure what their wingspans exactly are, but
Brian's is longer than Hobie's. That's my guess.
Yes. Brian Hudson is a, he's an outlier, like in terms, outliers are good in the bullpen, and the Brewers seem to always like seek those kind of dudes out. The fastball has some really interesting characteristics. The sweeper looks a little bit different this year, more sweepery. So he probably was a guy that was not going to make this roster out of camp initially, and then injuries happened.
Yeah.
Probably both Miley and Devin Williams impacted that, but now he's here.
Taylor Clark.
Taylor Clark. He had three innings on Saturday and was completely dominant. Like, the Mets had no chance against this guy. So we saw it at times in spring. He had a couple of blow up outings, like toward the end. He said he was putting too much pressure on himself, which very real. He knew he was in the roster consideration. People were starting to put him on the team. And, you know, I have no idea how this ends up going for Brian Hudson, but there's reasons to believe this is like a similar Hobie Milner kind of situation.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't imagine they thought he was going to throw three full innings when they put him on the mound, but, you know, especially with the off day coming up on Monday, it didn't make sense to necessarily just save everybody else, but why not? He kept getting outs. Like, it was so consistent.
That's huge. It's absolutely huge. I don't know who else they were, like, Abner Ribe said he was available.
Yeah.
But do you really want to throw that, like, your young firearm closer 3 days in a row to start the year? Probably not a good idea. So These are the hidden things throughout a season that really, really mattered. They didn't have, aside from the standpoint of, like, they didn't have to pitch, I don't know, Bryce Wilson or someone and, you know, see if he gets blown up.
Yeah.
There's real hidden value in him covering those three innings.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially after Bryce Wilson and Hobie Milner had both given up runs the previous day. Like, you kind of didn't have a ton of options there that you could fully be confident in. I mean, I guess you could go back to McGill, but, you know, that's again, great stuff from Brian Hudson. Okay, my first one for three up, three down. This is something you mentioned to me. My wife loves Bryce Terang, loves him, mainly because she is a big fan of defense. She's a former softball coach, loves players who can defend, and Bryce Terang can do that. He made some great defensive plays. She does not love that I am very down on his ability as an offensive player, as I think this podcast stance has been. Can he hit enough to be a big leaguer? Whereas the Brewers feel like he's an everyday second baseman, you know, they clearly believe in him. Maybe it is primarily just the defense, but they believe he can be something of a hitter. He did something, was it Saturday, where he had two hits of 100 miles per hour off the bat or more, which is, you know, whatever. I know people can take or leave like exit velocity. However, we're taking this one because what was it, August 8th? Mm-hmm. From August 8th last year to the end of the season, Bryce Terang had two hits of 100 miles per hour or more off the bat.
Yeah, two base hits.
Two base hits.
There was a few double plays he hit into in there as well. But
okay,
yeah.
Okay. But two hits, two clean hits of 100 miles per hour or more, matching what he was able to do at that velocity level August 8th of last year, the last 2 months of the season. I mean, that's really encouraging. And then he follows that up with another two-hit day with an extra base hit. You know, this is too small a sample to say that, we've seen some changes because we talked about it in spring training. It wasn't necessarily abundantly clear that he's a different hitter necessarily, but that is a nice piece of data, you know, and if you want to hope that there's going to be some improvement, do it, because all he has to do is get up to like slightly, you know, below average as an offensive player. And he is a plus player for this lineup. So pretty encouraging stuff from the second baseman.
Yeah, totally. I'll go to Colin Ray for my numero dos.
Fantastic.
Just a classic Colin Ray outing.
Was so Colin Ray.
Two only struck out two over five innings, and it didn't matter.
That is so Colin Ray. I love it.
Yeah. There was a bit of it, like, watching it when he would run into trouble. It was kind of always the right hitter up just to get out of it. But it was, you know, like, his stuff plays at this level. He's got the two different sinkers that he throws in different spots. That's rare. Cutter was solid for stealing strikes. He's got the four seamer, which I didn't think was great on Sunday, but that sweeper looked pretty good. And he throws the kitchen sink at you, but I think it's a slight bit more than just your standard kitchen sink. You know, it's got some nice backsplash, a nice open window overlooking, you know, overlooking the backyard right there.
It's an island, maybe?
It's like the island right there. So it's just a slight upgrade from your standard kitchen sink. And that's what I think of when I watch Colin Wright pitch. And you know what? You know what you're getting 90% of the time. It's going to be between 5 and 6 innings. It's going to be 1 to 3 or 4 runs. You know, never going to dazzle you, but it's absolutely going to get the job done. And how about that 12 pitch at bat, by the way, with Tyrone Taylor? That was kind of those guys probably had to be having fun with that while they were engaged.
Yes.
In it.
Yes. Tyrone Taylor did end up with an RBI single for the Mets this weekend. But so where am I going? How about a little brotherly love thing? We had Trevor McGill and Tyler McGill. The Mets announcers, by the way, definitely, I assumed it was just pronounced Tyler. It's T-Y-L-O-R, but the Mets
announcers. It is Tyler.
It is, the way they pronounced it was definitely Tyler McGill, who started for the Mets on Sunday. These two are brothers. Trevor McGill has been one of the more surprising revelations, I would say, the last season plus for the Milwaukee Brewers. He's been a really key component of that bullpen, kind of materializing out of thin air. Tyler McGill, though, he left his start, unfortunately, with an injury after, what was it, 4 innings of work. So some trepidation there, I suppose. But always good to see the brothers get together. We had that with Taylor and Tyler Rogers back when, you know, am I getting the names right?
And Trevor Rogers. No, Trevor's on the Marlins.
Trevor Rogers is a different player entirely. No relation.
Oh, dear God. What's his name?
Tyler Rogers. They are the mirror twins.
Taylor, yes.
One throws lefty, one throws righty. We had that recently. Now we have that again. Trevor McGill. Trevor and Tyler. Hopefully.
Do you remember when the Brewers were involved in a game with two brothers starting?
I do. Scott and Jason Alexander?
Jason Alexander, one of the Brewers pitchers of all time.
Yes, with Scott Alexander of the Dodgers, I want to say, at the time. I don't remember for sure. But yes, that wasn't that long ago.
Giants, I want to say.
Oh, that's Giants. Right. That's right, Giants. So yeah, Trevor, got Taylor's, and this is so frustrating. Everybody has a T name and they're all the same and I can't get them straight, but yes, the McGill brothers. All right. What do you got? Your third and final for 3-of-3 now.
Did you see Omar Narvaez play baseball this weekend? I did.
He got his glove in the way of a Christian Yelich bat. I saw that.
It was an interesting game for him, but the end result was kind of similar to how the first year with New York Mets, Omar Narvaez went.
Which was
he did almost hit a couple home runs. There was some the adventures of I could have gone with the adventures of Jackson Churio for this, so I'm going to kind of blend them 2-in-1.
Yeah,
there was a fly ball. There was a couple runners on, maybe bases loaded, and it just kept carrying. And Jackson Churio keeps going back, and it's like, oh boy, and then eventually he settles under it right at the warning track. Some fans were mad at him. Mets fans were not in a jovial mood this weekend. I can't blame them.
No.
Some guy bad lit over their thing. So I don't really know what succinct point I was trying to make with the third one, but Omar Narvaez was back.
He's still in
Jackson
baseball.
Jackson Trio made all the plays, but they were adventurous.
Yeah. Omar Narvaez got paid a couple years ago by the Mets last year.
He did get paid.
And good for him. He got the bag. That was excellent. He had a really terrible year last year. Just horrendous.
What was Billy Epler? That was Billy Epler, right? Two off seasons ago.
Yeah.
What were they cooking?
I don't know. They paid him way more than I truly imagined he would make. And you know what? He was solid with the Brewers. No shade whatsoever. He just got paid more than I thought he was going to get. And he had some injuries last year too. But it was not good. And that Mets lineup isn't scary. Like they aren't a threat. You know, DJ Stewart. Like no offense to people built like me playing baseball. I love that. But like. He's not a great hitter, it seems.
Speaking of which, did you see Rowdy's homer on Sunday?
I didn't. Rowdy. I didn't.
Three-run homer to take the lead in the seventh.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I think he had struck out like his first 6 at-bats or something.
I did see that he had a bad.
And then went ding-dong Johnson.
He had struck out his first 2 at-bats, was pulled from the game, and the pinch hitter homered, I believe, in the first Pirates game of the year. So shouts to the Rowdy Tellez leading the undefeated Pittsburgh Pirates. That's a great start for them. You know, speaking of which, let me close down my 3-of-3 down looking at the scoreboard. Kurt, did you happen to see the Cubs this weekend? Did you watch any Chicago Cubs baseball?
Oh, that's right. I had a Kurt Blanch that was going to be my Kurt Blanch.
Oh.
And it involved a play in their season opening game.
Do you want me to save it for that? I got more.
No, I changed it. I was going to do something else.
Okay. But the Cubs definitely lost 2 of 3. It was not good. They had a really rough lost on a walk-off and extras on the
they were handed the game on Thursday too.
Yes, they should have won that game. They did not. It's always tough. It's always tough when a new manager gets started and things just don't go as planned. Real tough, man. Sorry. I mean, the Texas Rangers are the defending world champions. They got a ridiculous lineup.
Wyatt Langford is really good.
I know.
Really good.
Jackson Chourio, he's got an uphill battle to be the biggest rookie in baseball this year.
Well, especially when Yamamoto exists. Yeah.
We don't count him, though, as we discussed last week. We're not considering him a rookie. Maybe he wins rookie of the year, but he's not a rookie on this podcast.
No.
He is a seasoned veteran who looked terrible in spring training, but oh boy, was he sandbagging and looked just fine on his in his first start with the Dodgers.
Just doesn't sandbag in spring training.
Absolutely. I mean,
did you read anything I wrote?
Did you hear our podcasts? I mean, we were not on our game. We're on our game now. We're incredible right now.
It was the dry. It was the dry air.
It was for sure.
There was one day. There was one day. DL Hall saw me in the clubhouse. Was like, dude, do you need eye drops? I was like, yes.
Okay.
Yes, please.
Because you had like really bloodshot eyes.
Yeah, they were just like, just totally dried out in the lack of the humidless land, the humidless yet endless allergy land that is Phoenix. When I was down horrendous.
When I see someone with really red eyes, that is not my first thought. My first thought is, oh no, what's wrong? You're crying. My second thought is, actually, I'm not going to share my second thought, but my third thought might be, oh, you need eye drops. That's
I had definitely not done the devil's lettuce at work.
Lettuce at work. That would be a bad idea. Just a terrible strategy on your part. You know, one thing we didn't talk about, 3 up, 3 down, we could. Jefferson Caro leaving a minor league game with what looks like kind of a nasty shoulder injury. So that's a big, big concern.
He is getting the MRI or has gotten the MRI as we speak. We are awaiting results. So those might be up by Tuesday.
Yeah, that's a tough one. He's obviously an extremely highly regarded catching prospect. He, you know, is the future at the catching position, although William Contreras could also be the future. So he is part of the future at the catching position. It would be devastating if they lost
Eric Haas back, though.
Yes, thank goodness. They have that depth back, Eric Haas back. They may need him at this point because that would be a big loss otherwise. Also, you know, Robert Gasser already down. So they're really exciting young depth guys that haven't premiered yet, haven't debuted yet, premiered like their movies, haven't debuted yet. We will be waiting to see what the injury there is with Jefferson Caro. All right, let's go back in time. We got a fun one to go back in time to here on this weekly segment of Remember When. Kurt, I don't think you ever answered this question or I didn't tell you the answer. I wanted to know where you thought I'd be going this week because
you ghosted me.
It had something to do with Easter, but it wasn't Easter Sunday, the Easter Sunday from 1987 that everyone remembers in Brewers history. We're only going back 10 years. Can you remember what happened on April 20th, 2014 for the Milwaukee Brewers? I'm bored. I'll tell you, it's the Brewers in a big fight on Easter Sunday.
Yes. Rest in peace, Travis Snyder's eye socket.
Oh, Travis Snyder took it so bad. That was so tough. Do you remember who threw the punch that drilled Travis Snyder? Because it wasn't Carlos Gomez.
Was it Maldonado?
It was Martin Maldonado.
Oh, it's always Martin Maldonado.
Always. Starting catcher for the Chicago White Sox. So
first team all don't get in a fight with that dude.
He was a really nice guy, Martin Maldonado. You didn't want to get in a fight with him. He was built like a linebacker, like a bona fide NFL linebacker. But what a wonderful person. I can't believe he threw this punch in retrospect.
Travis Snyder must have said something.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going back to April 20th, 2014. Brewers versus Pirates. An Easter brawl. We're thinking Easter this weekend. We're thinking brawls. Let's go back in time. 10 years almost. Well, we've got a couple weeks before we get to the day. This is Carlos Gomez got under the skin of the Pittsburgh Pirates. He hits a long fly ball to center field. Cadillacs it just a little bit. He would later say he thought it was caught. That's not what happened. He thought it was a home run. It wasn't. It was off the center field wall. Andrew McCutchen couldn't catch it. Future Milwaukee Brewer Andrew McCutchen. So Gomez ends up racing fast man. He can run just a little bit, as we know. Gets all the way to third base anyway, probably where he would have ended up either way. But Gerrit Cole, noted Bulldog Gerrit Cole, formerly of the Pittsburgh Pirates, took a little exception. So he retrieved the ball, said some words to Carlos Gomez. Carlos Gomez took exception to that, starts chasing after Gerrit Cole. Dugouts emptied. And I don't mean like it emptied in New York and Queens, Flushing, New York City, whatever we're calling that place. These benches emptied and people were throwing punches. This was a real one. And so Gomez had, again, gone after Cole. Martin Maldonado was out there. He was not in this game. Travis Snyder was not in this game. But they ended up, you know, punching each other. Well, Maldonado punched Travis Snyder, knocks off his hat, opens up a cut above his eye. Snyder gets ejected. Maldonado gets ejected, obviously. Russell Wilson gets involved in the fisticuffs a little bit.
Excuse me?
Russell Wilson? Sorry. No. Russell Martin. I said Russell Wilson. Now that would be a story that we would not forget. Russell Wilson jumps out of the stands. This is Russell Martin, my bad, catcher for the Pittsburgh Pirates, previously the Dodgers. He gets involved. He later challenges Martin Maldonado to an offseason fight to raise money for charity. I love
this. We need more of this.
Actually, no, we don't. I take that back. We need more baseball players fighting.
Yes.
But we need less staged celebrities fighting.
I agree. I want to have my cake and eat it too. I want to be frowning upon the violence of baseball while also being allowed just to laugh at it a little bit. So that's where we're at. Russell Martin, not Wilson, challenges Maldonado. Maldonado was asked about that afterwards. He did not entertain it. He was like, I don't even know what to say to that. This was actually a thrilling Easter game. Mark Reynolds tied the game with a home run in the eighth, tied it at 1-1.
It's good. He could see the ball.
Yes, that one he saw. Ryan Braun later ties it in the top of the ninth after Jose Tabata had gotten an RBI off of Will Smith in the bottom of the eighth. So the Pirates have taken a 2-1 lead. Yeah, I know. There's a name, right? Ryan Braun ties it. It goes to 13 innings. You've lost your backup catcher. Elian Herrera, noted Brewers legend, now is your backup catcher, although he didn't actually end up playing. Leading off the 14th inning, Chris Davis. Chris with a K-H. Chris Davis, Oakland Athletics, consistent batting average fame. Chris Davis, also all the home runs. He hits a home run leading off the 14th. The Brewers end up winning that game 3-2. Pretty exciting stuff.
Who got a save?
Francisco Rodriguez. It was K-Rod. K-Rod was there for that one. He was saved for the extras because
Ron Renicki wasn't pitching his closer in the ninth.
I mean, obviously, you never use your closer in a tie game or losing. Back to the shot in Florida of it all. Josh Hader took a loss. He's pitched in 3 games for Houston already, but Houston has not won any of them, which is quite surprising. Not how I would have expected things to go, but
there was one year where the Brewers didn't lose a game that Hader pitched in until like July or something.
Yeah.
Astros have lost 3 of them. Thanks.
Incredible stuff. Juan Soto getting the RBI single to break a tie. That is definitely not giving anyone flashbacks. Having Juan Soto hit a tie-breaking single off of Josh Hader in a big spot in a game in which Trent Grisham is also part of the roster. Although
it is quite funny how Soto and Grisham are just inseparable,
completely inextricable. It's so weird, isn't it? Traded together to the New York Yankees. It's wild stuff. It really is funny. I'm sure they've talked about it. I don't know if they talk about it a lot, but oh man, 2019, what a time. Okay, let's close this down. We've been talking at you for several, almost an hour now. You want to get to your opening day festival, your tailgating, et cetera, et cetera. Let's close this down with Kurt's take of the week. Here it is, Kurt Blanche.
Ryan Braun sends it to left center and deep. Get up! Get out of here! Gone! For Ryan Braun, he just hit a walk-off
So I mentioned I have a couple options here. Do you want the eviscerate the league and the league of rules, Kurt Blanche, or eviscerate the New York Mets, Kurt Blanche?
I am really torn here. Love eviscerating everybody involved.
Okay, let's
start with the league.
Let's do the league rules.
By the way, those league uniforms, I really thought they actually might be a little better by opening day.
I wasn't even going to go into the uniforms. They're terrible. They're worse than I thought.
They really are bad. I cannot believe they're tolerating this, but whatever. That's been legislated. Whatever. Tell me what you got right now.
The gray uniforms are terrible. In Thursday's Cubs against Rangers game, there was a foul ball that was ruled to be not a foul ball. And because of that, the catcher, assuming it was a foul ball, didn't go back to get the baseball. And the go-ahead run for the Cubs, I think this was the top of the ninth inning, scores from second. Maybe it was the eighth. But either way, go-ahead run scores because the catcher was kind of dogging it to the ball because he knew it was a foul ball. The umpires confer. No one saw that it was a foul ball. Replay clearly shows that it was a foul ball, right? Oh, well, no problem, right? We can undo this. We have replay. We can challenge these things. We have crew chief reviews. We have technology. This is 2024. We'll just take a look at it under the hood and put that runner back on second base and call it a strike. No. You cannot challenge whether it was a swing was a made contact with the ball for a foul ball or not. How?
I don't know.
How do we live in this world where so many minute plays in baseball are challengeable? Everything can be challenged. Except if a guy swung and it hit the bat. Like, you can clearly tell every time that happened that it happened. Because you know why? The spin changes. The ball direction of the ball changes. It makes no sense.
No,
justice, I guess, in this case was eventually served because the Rangers tied the game in the ninth inning. And then it went to extra innings, as the game should have done all along. But, and the Rangers ended up winning it too. But just infuriating that baseball has this glaring omission in its replay review possibilities. What are we doing here?
Yeah, Jonah Heim, the catcher who lost the ball there, I guess, lost in quotation marks, gets the big hit to win the game. But like,
gets the walk-off win, yeah.
Fix your stuff, MLB. It doesn't have to be complicated. Like, this is
fix not the pants. Stop making the font size 9 on the jerseys.
Yeah.
I simply enjoy tuning into a game and being able to tell who the pitcher is by reading his name.
Yeah.
But what do I know?
Can't do it now.
I know?
Is that it? Did we want to keep going on the Mets, or have we
beaten? I've just decided the Mets, what are they doing? What are they doing?
They're in a tough place. David Stearns.
David Stearns is really good at his job, and I'm not, you know, necessarily saying their offseason was really bad, but I expected way better when Steve Cohen took over. And you look up and down that roster, you look up and down that pitching staff. It's like, Tyrone Taylor has a pretty good career of hitting lefties decently, right? But how is Tyrone, like, Tyrone Taylor is the, you know, a Brewers type number 5 or 6 hitter against lefties. How is he the second game of the year cleanup hitter for the Mets, whose payroll is $300 million against lefties? I don't get it.
I do
not get it.
I felt this way about the Mets last year. Their lineup was so
Tyler important. McGill is their number 3 starter. Like, I think if you're a Brewers fan, you really have to, after a series like that, really have to appreciate the work that the Brewers baseball ops, front office, scouting, all those people do. Because they're getting guys like Oliver Dunn and they're getting guys like Colin Ray for absolutely nothing that no one else really wants or goes after. And, you know, those guys contribute to winning. Ryan Hudson, Yoel Piamps, players like that. It's like, okay, if the Mets can successfully do that and not blow $200 million on players whose WAR is -0.1, they should be all right. But first, they have to do the thing where it's don't acquire all the players in free agency who stink. And so far, they have not done that.
Yeah. Well, the Brewers will look to continue their undefeated season against the Minnesota Twins. Again, that is Tuesday afternoon, 3:10 p.m. It's going to be a very fun day. It's going to be snowing probably in Milwaukee. So good thing, as the only American Midwest city to build a roof around their Major League Baseball stadium, the Brewers are good that way. I don't know if your tailgating plans are going to be exactly what you hope they would be, but
Scan the QR code.
Learn how to park. It's new. It's different. There will be people there to help you figure it out if you're new to this or whatever.
Will there?
Yeah, they got a couple people. They've said.
Oh, I thought, okay. I thought the whole point was that they don't need people.
Well, they won't eventually, but they have them for now. For now, to be like, here's how you do this, old man or old woman or, you know, 40-year-old or 30-year-old or 20-year-old, because it's new. It's going to be challenging for a lot of people. So we'll see how that goes. That'll be a fun time again at American Family Field, 3:10 p.m. Kurt will be there. Todd will be there. I'll be there. And we'll be bringing you all kinds of stuff at jsonline.com. Follow our live blog. We got updates all day long from the parking lot and from inside the stadium. And we will keep you updated. We've got another episode of Microbrew coming next week. Thank you for joining us, everybody. We will talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.